Okay, first of all, great reading from the Old Testament, right? Kind of, you know, that was inspiringly good. So thank you very much. Some of you may recognize what has happened here. Some, this might be, what? What was that? Kind of like, you know, sort of late night evening news. Like, who is what and why are they so? So let me just kind of put a little context to this because it's important. We're going to be talking today about conflict. Are you excited about conflict? Yeah, no. But it's part of our life, isn't it? And so I want to spend a little bit of time. I cannot like take care of everything that resolves around this. God can, and we're praying for that, but just allow me to talk with you a little bit about it. Now, if you remember, we started really early in the Old Testament with the creation of things, and we have been moving along in the narrative story. And last week, we were talking about David. David had just become king, and he danced as he was entering into Jerusalem with the Ark of the Covenant, right? Some of y'all remember that? Ooh, that's good. I did my job last week. All right. So David, in this particular story, David has lived his life and died. And at the end of his life, there were some really good things that they could say were, oh man, he was doing really well. And there were some horrible, nightmarish, murderous things that you have to kind of look at David and go, come on. So, and David ruled over a unified kingdom, which means that there's the northern part of Israel, and then there's the southern part. And he actually was able to kind of bring those two unhappy with each other bodies back together and had, you know, one package that was supposed to go to one of his sons. That is just a nightmare of controversy in and of itself. But then Salmon comes into town. Did you get that joke? Thank you. You have to kind of like laugh every now and then, kind of keep me going. It's like putting a nickel in the machine. So we see Solomon, and what Solomon does is, you know, some wonderful things, but some really terrible things too. And remember, we had a quick review of the Ten Commandments. Do you remember having that? Well, Solomon just kind of tears through those commandments, and he has kind of lost his way. Now, what we have here in this story is what's left after Solomon has passed. There's basically, kind of one sort of king who is in a place of dealing with his father's passing. People come to him and say, you know, your dad was rough on us, and he really required a lot of us. Would you please, you know, in your new reign, not be so difficult? And he goes to his advisors, the older, more mature advisors, and they say, yeah, you need to kind of back off these people. And then he goes to his buddies, right? He goes to the guys he grew up with, he played football with. They would go down the lake together and that sort of thing. He goes to him and says, hey, should I do that? And they say to him, no, you need to double down. Now, it doesn't really say why, but in essence, you can kind of read between the lines, it's about greed, and it's about power, and it's about, I'm going to show you what I can do, and I'm not going to listen to compassion or wisdom. Isn't that funny? Compassion and wisdom gets thrown out the window, but what we have instead is mine. So there is a usurper that rises up and says, all right, let's come and we'll form our own group. And so the kingdom that had been divided with, been unified with David gets divided. Now, notice what happens at the end of the story. It's really kind of subtle, but at the end of the story, what you have is that other king saying, you know, I'm afraid that if you continue to worship the way that Well, you've been told to for a long time now, the way that God kind of put down in the record, the way that Moses sort of like put into place, if you continue to do that, then you're going to be going back and forth between the places in the other kingdom that I don't want you to go into. So I'm going to create a completely different religious system for you to do. He makes golden calves. Well, he probably commissions them. He makes golden calves and he sends them to some major towns and says, there's the God. You don't have to go back to Jerusalem. You don't certainly have to go back to the temple. No, your God is out here. Worship him. Now, those of you who remember their Ten Commandments, is that a good thing? Right. So, there's this terrible, terrible thing that goes down between those two. And they live in that conflict. In fact, you know, it's about power. It's about, I'm going to be the one in charge. And you see, in a very big way, conflict, so much so that it divides people that were all part of the group that was, you know, rescued out of Israel, out of Egypt. It divides them dramatically. I know it's hard to imagine that now. Right? No, it's not hard at all. We see those kind of divisions happening all the time, not just at the national political level. It happens in local levels of politics. It you know, kind of like churns through things. By the way, this is not unusual for even American politics. The things that were said about Thomas Jefferson, the oppositional research that was done on Thomas Jefferson would curl your hair. If you're looking for a good hair curling solution, read through the newspaper accounts of what kind of, you know, things that people were saying early in our days here in the United States. Conflict is so much of our existence, and it's motivated by different things, but we find ourselves having to kind of work through it. And honestly, conflict itself sometimes can be really, really helpful. We have an argumentative system of justice, right? You have a judge, but you also have people on different sides arguing, you know, giving testimony, testing things out in order to try to figure out what's the truth and what's the best thing and what's moral and ethical, right? Sorry, I got distracted. So she's fine. There, she landed. That's good. I mean, conflict is a major part of who we are as people. And it can be helpful because it can also sometimes help us figure out what is the right thing to do. I don't know how many times I've been in conflict with someone until I listened to them and went, you're right. Or someone had to say to me, they're right. And here's why. And it's okay to, it's not a failure to kind of be on the wrong side of things. It is actually a sign of wisdom and strength sometimes to go, you know, you're right. And I was wrong about that. And let's move forward in this way. Or how can we compromise and find our best way together? So we have to deal with it. It's part of who we are. Now, it can get blown up into extremes, and that's what you see at some of our kind of higher political levels, because, you know, honestly, politicians and some companies have figured out how to motivate people, to get people to do things out of fear and out of the drive of the conflict, right? And so I sat in my office not terribly long ago, and a lovely person sat with me. This was not here at Sterling. We have everything figured out at Sterling. But this lovely man sat across from me, and he said, he's really kind of like working through some hard things, and he was speaking very compassionately about people in the church. And he said, but you know them people from, and he named a political party, those people, and he just went to town. Oh, they are, and then doom, 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 doom. He didn't even ask me if I would be inclined in that particular way. He would just assume that, oh, all the good people, I guess I was one of the good people, you know, all those that are right are of this. And you know, how do we get there? Now, people on both sides of political equations, or multiple sides of that, find themselves doing the same thing about each other. So the right lobs things at the left lobs things at the right. People in the middle are like, wow, this is, oh, we're hit, you know. And then finally, you know, people kind of are at least moved in a particular direction. We got into office, we got out of office, all that. Now, are you enjoying this? Are you thinking about barbecue right now? Me too. So let me kind of say that conflict can escalate to something really foolish and horrific. But if you take it down a notch, you look at it, it's part of our day-to-day life. Now, this is where I'm supposed to sell you my book with 3 easy steps to get rid of conflict. I'm not going to do that. I haven't written that book yet. ChatGPT is not helping me out with that. By the way, no artificial intelligence was used in making this sermon. The intelligence that is used, however, is questionable and weak. What I would like to ask you, though, is to come to maybe a place to start in dealing with those things of conflict that are around us. And the place to start is a realization that the people that are on the other side of whatever conflict it is are people. I think I read it in the Bible somewhere that we are created in the image of God. Did you see that somewhere? That we are created in the very image of God. That's not arguable. It's implanted inside of us. There's stuff that gets on the outside of us. There's confusion and mess and lots of bad paint that goes over top of that. But fundamentally, a person is created in the image of God, and because of that, is available to have this amazing, beautiful relationship that is redemptive with Jesus, right? That we are people, the people in front of us are people of sacred worth, of value to God. And also, people are in a place that we are asked to care for and love. I think I read it somewhere where Jesus said that we were supposed to love and pray for our enemies. Anybody excited about that? That's hard. It's hard. But Jesus comes through and says, here's what you do. You were supposed to love God with all of your heart and your mind and your soul and your strength and your neighbor as yourself. No qualification on that neighbor. No, like the good neighbors are the neighbors of a particular skin color, are the neighbors of a particular orientation, are the neighbors of a particular political party, are the neighbors who wash their feet. We have to start there. Now, we may disagree with each other, but we have to start with the loving kindness. Remember talking about that? The loving kindness and the respect that God invites us all to. A quick story. When I was a young man in graduate school the first time, I was in my apartment and I was feverishly working on a paper. I had this paper that was due the next day and it had to get done. And of course, I messed around and didn't do it the way I should have. And so I'm like banging away at this primitive computer that I had. And I'm sitting there focused on that. And then someone comes and knocks on my door I didn't have a ring or a doorbell. You know, my little apartment had a door. And so they knock on the door, and I'm like, who's at my door? So I march over to the door, and I'm like mad already, like the bad seed. Okay? So I'm just, and so I open up the door, and first thing I saw was the cutest little girl in a Halloween costume, which was a surprise to me because I had forgotten about Halloween all the time. I had the paper to write, you know. And so I see this, and, you know, she had these gorgeous blue eyes, and they were open like, you know, cat eyes, you know, when they, I love you, you're so sweet, like that. And so we had this cute little, and she had a princess dress on, and she was just like adorable, and she had her bag open, and she goes, twink or twink, you know, like, you kid, you, no, I didn't do that, but I wanted to. Now, what happened is I saw the kid, and she's saying trick or treat, and then I look up and I see her father, who has, I swear to you, a 50-pound video camera. You remember how the video cameras used to be so big? It looked like a toolbox on top of his shoulder, and he had the monocle up to his eye and this huge lens, and I look up and I see him there, and he's smiling at me, and I'm terrified. Because I had no idea what I was going to give that kid, but I knew I needed to do something. So I ran, I said, wait right here. And I ran back into my, and slammed the door in their face, ran, got to the kitchen, opened up the cupboard, and I had a jar of peanut butter. I had two cans of beans and like some cinnamon. You know, graduate school, okay? I'm in there and I'm looking at that and I said, oh, there's one other thing. So I go and I see the thing and I run back to the door and they're still there, surprisingly. I open up the door and into that little bag, I dropped a package of instant oatmeal.